Hi everyone, and welcome to First Rank Fire. This is a podcast that gives me the chance to chat with some of the coolest people from around the 40k community. I'm your host, Ben, and in today's episode, we're going to be chatting with another member of the legendary Tabletop Tactics crew. He's a follower of the Omnus Sire, and probably has one of the most fantastic mechanics arms I've seen. He's also the founder of the best game around, The Age of Stigmar. And yeah, a fantastic person both in front and behind the camera. Welcome to the show, Stig. How are you doing?
Thank you very much, sir. You're very kind. Yeah, I'm very well. I'm very well. Looking forward to this. So.
Yeah, just an hour or so of just chatting with Warhammer. It's always good fun.
That's what you want.
Yeah, that's what we all kind of get into. Yeah, I'll crack straight to the questions. So what originally got you into Warhammer?
Well, I suppose it's the similar kind of story that a load of people have in terms of being a kid. I think I'm quite a lot older than quite a lot of people that on TC, so maybe it's slightly different. I remember Hero Quest some friends from down the road had Hero Quest, and then I got Space Crusade. Okay. Which, for those that remember that, it was basically Space Hulk before there was Space Hulk, because it was another MB game, so it was another one, same as Hero Quest, which was kind of like a collab. And then the only people I knew of that then went further with that a few years later were some, what I would have thought of as being the rich kids in the school. And two brothers that had got into 40k.
Yeah.
And so I got a little bit into 40k second edition, this is. Again, I'm that old. And so, you know, that box set. We've just got one of those boxes recently at the studio, nice. Which is very nostalgic for me.
Yeah.
So, and orcs were my kind of first love with that.
Nice.
But then, where the two brothers that were the rich kids with their guard and tyranids, which was, you know, the big thing at the time. And with all the new stuff that they could afford all the time, I could not compete in the slightest.
Yeah.
So then when Necromunda first edition came out, because it was 10 dudes in a box, hey, I can still play for a little bit. So yeah, that was, I played Necromunda with, there were about three or four people, not a lot of people, but a few people. Because it's a similar situation. You could save up all your money to be able to get one box of stuff.
Yeah.
That is what you could do. And then Classic, you know, moved away from it, you know, as other things took over for a good long time, really. And so I kind of found my way back in. But I'm not going to say too much about that because it's probably going to answer about four of your questions down the line otherwise.
That's fine. You just answer as many questions as one because it minimises how much I may have to say.
Well, there you go. I suppose, how old am I now? Very old. I've no idea when Necromunda first edition came out, but I probably played that for like a year.
Okay.
And then took a long break until I was 34, 35, because that's when I was in the build-up to my wife and I's wedding, and it's quite stressful. Lo and behold, getting married can be quite stressful with all planning and stuff. And a good friend of mine suggested, because we've been chatting about him getting back into Warhammer, and with another one of our good friends that was very much into Warhammer, the wry smile on your face suggests you know where this is coming.
Yeah.
It suggested that I maybe kind of get, you know, have a go at painting again, because that was, you know, my first thing. Maybe that would be really cool. That would be a good thing for my mental health, because it'd been really important for him. And so I found myself back in. They'd just started filming some little games in their kitchen or in one of their kitchens. And yeah, the rest, as they kind of say, is history. But again, we'll probably come back to a lot of that.
We'll definitely come back to that bit, yeah. Yeah, or the chef may have spoiled that already, but we'll come back to that one. Yeah. So, I mean, you kind of talked a little bit there about sort of painting and mental health. Do you have sort of a particular favourite part of the hobby, be it like painting, building, playing, the social aspects?
I think the interesting thing for me about this specific hobby versus other things I've been into in my life and still am into, etc., is because it has so many aspects to it.
Yeah.
And I think for many of us, we have very hectic lifestyles. So certain times in our life, we can take more focus on one of these aspects, but you can still be in that same world, that same universe, obviously, but the world of your hobby friends, etc. Yeah. And I think for me, that's probably the element that I love the most about it, is that depending on what's happening in my life, I will move more into this bit or that bit or whatever it might be. And so it would be easy to say, I suppose I'm very fortunate. My gaming group is obviously a very unique gaming group. And so I love that part. I love the playing element of it with that sense. And I've been fortunate enough to go to some really cool tournaments, and I really have enjoyed that aspect as well. And I want to do more of it, but time at the moment, for example, means that I can't do a lot of that.
Yeah.
So then it's not that I don't like it as much. It's more that just right now it's taking a bit more of a backseat to the social aspects of, the filming aspects. And, then even at the moment, I'm struggling a little bit for time for painting and building, but it doesn't mean I'm not listening to audiobooks on the way to work.
Yeah.
So I can, for me, because I love all of the elements, it allows it to move in and out at different points in my life. And I find that sometimes I'm just absolutely absorbing audiobooks. I'm working my way through the Horus Heresy. So I'm thinking about halfway through that, for example. Nice. Audible is very good for us, for dyslexics.
Yes,
it's massive. So, that will be a common thing, like reading all the articles, all those elements. When time doesn't allow for other things, I can still be involved in it. So I've kind of copped out, I know, a little bit with that answer, but it's more the fact that, like, I love all of the elements. It's just that I find that at different points, my life means I have to focus on some rather than others, and I'll just go back to the others at later points.
Yeah, I mean, I similar to you, I tend to also find that my sort of interest and my enjoyment of different aspects of it sort of wane and wax a little bit. So everyone gets burnt out of painting and stuff like that. So it may be that I fairly recently turned to painting for some sort of, you were talking about the sort of mental health aspects of things. And so I painted a lot. I was doing a lot of painting, really sort of putting myself into it. And I was like, I'm kind of fed up with it. And so it gave me a lot of joy for that period of time. And then I kind of moved and I ended up playing a lot more games and stuff like that. And sort of found that enjoyment. But I think it's an incredible hobby for being able to do that. Like I say, no matter how much time you've got, there's almost always enough time to do something Warhammer related.
Yeah, totally. It's like, I definitely, there were points where I've never been in a position to be able to go to an RTT every week. That's never been something I've been able to do, but I've certainly been lucky enough to go to some really cool tournaments. And, I definitely, I've been to loads of GTs and Warhammer World and things like that, and I'm lucky enough to have gone to several No Retreats out in Gibraltar things like that. But, and I remember doing bits where I remember there was a period where I went to a GT of Warhammer World, then a few weeks later went out to LVO, and then literally the weekend, having got back from LVO that week, went to another GT at Warhammer World.
Nice.
So I think at that point, I've done, I've done my tournaments for a little bit, and then it was time to back off a little bit, And I do love all that stuff. Mainly, it has to be said, for the fact that I get to play lots of games over a period of time and look and talk to lots of people and do all of that sort of side of it. I do enjoy the competitive play style sometimes. There's a part of my brain that enjoys that piece, the kind of crunchier side of things. But it's more the social aspect of those things, really, for me. And I'm in a slightly odd place that perhaps my tournament experience might be slightly different from, Joe or Jane Blogg's normal tournament experience, because we also get the opportunity to meet people that perhaps know a little bit of who you are and what have you, and that's wonderful. That's an incredibly privileged position to be in. So then you get like a really insight, because then they really open up, and that's really fun stuff, because you get to really know like someone in a different level at one of those spaces. So I think that's incredibly fortunate to be in that situation.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I've just recently done my first sort of singles tournament. I'd done one doubles tournament before that, but did the sort of first one. Got a little bit battered and sort of came out the back of it feeling a bit despondent, but then had a good think about it, and it was kind of similar to you. I enjoyed the social aspects of it, so I kind of thought back and went, actually, I played three good games against some really, really cool people. I learned quite a lot, and actually I got to chat with my mates, got to see loads of really cool different models, see how people were building it and stuff like that. So I really enjoyed it from that aspect of it. And I guess, my local tournament was three games across the day, about 2.5 hours for a 1750-point game. And 2.5 hours seems like a long time until you're playing a 1750 competitive game, and all of a sudden the conversation tends to dry up a little bit.
Yeah, it's a funny one. I mean, I was very, again, incredibly fortunate, so I'm just not saying this without realizing that. My first ever tournament I got to go to was a No Retreat in Gibraltar.
That's awesome.
So, and it was incredible. And I I realized because of it that realized on the flight out there, which is always a great thing to realize on, when you're flying somewhere, is hang on, I've never played a game of 40K when I'm not with a camera pointing at me. How does this work? So I think the day before the tournament started, I had a friendly game with someone that wanted to play, and I still talk to that guy, you know, today. Nice. I still count him as a friend. And then on the first day of the tournament, I got battered in my first game. And again, I'm still friends with, I count him as a friend and talk to him regularly. I've played him a couple of times at tournaments, weirdly. And, you know, those kind of experiences, they stay with you, right? But, yeah. You know, and I think, you know, with, funnily enough, because both those games I got beaten, and both those games, like, I did the same thing that I do every time I get beaten. What would you do differently? Yeah. Like, if you were me, what would you have done differently? Where did I fall into your trap that you wanted me to do that, you know, I could avoid? Because, you know, it's always one of those things that, like, it's easy to fall into the, you know, if you're a small group of friends or whomever you play with, then you can always kind of find yourself falling into that situation where you know what they're going to do, so therefore you're all right. But then when somebody you don't know does something completely out there, you weren't expecting it. So it's always interesting to get kind of other people's insight.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Okay. So, sort of moving on to armies and stuff like that. Obviously, you're kind of well known for playing a couple of key armies. So, what's your favorite army? And I'm going to say it. Why is it Mechanicus?
So I've alluded to this already. So let me spell it out a little bit more. So I was friends with Beard first. We worked together in Brighton, and both moved up to work in London. Very similar time frames, and got to know a certain gentleman by the name of Lawrence Baker. And so when I was first sort of, you know, Joe was suggesting about, hey, I think, you know, maybe painting would be a good idea. I did the thing, you know, I asked lots of people, I asked those two, what would you play if it was me, et cetera. And I looked at the Games Workshop website for a very long time.
Yeah.
And I don't quite know. So originally I fell actually for the Death Corp of Krieg what I first kind of fell into, and thinking, these look amazing. Yeah. This looks horrible. And that's interesting. But I liked that kind of, that really down and dirty kind of look.
Yeah.
Even on the kind of official Forge World photos, is how they are. They're always that grim. And, you know, I always kind of saw this universe as horrific and nothing good at all. So the idea of it being grim was very important. And then, you know, kind of ummed and ahed about these things, went back and forth, and we kind of regularly, saying to Lawrence, well, what about this, or what about that, or, you know, these kind of things. Started to, I haven't a better idea. This was 7th edition.
Okay.
And started to have a, you know, watching more and more shows on the channel, because it was starting to pick up. You kind of start learning the rules and realizing what an army would actually look like. And then I started doing maths. Realized that if I wanted to, if this was going to be my first army, I'm never going to play a game with these. Might be great as just a painting thing, but by this point, I realized that I wanted to actually play the game as well.
Yeah.
Especially if I'm spending that much money, I want to kind of, you know, be doing something with it. And lo and behold, you know, Beard and Lawrence were looking like they were having a lot of fun playing the game, so I wanted to do that too. So then I, you know, did the thing, kept on looking around things, and AdMech had actually just launched Insane.
Okay. Yeah.
So they were a relatively new army. So even because of my, you know, back in the days, you know, thinking about metal miniatures and not wanting to get involved in that sort of stuff, being told about resin being hard to work with, so I was thinking, well, it makes the most sense to stick with a plastic army. And then it kind of dawned on me that I could do the AdMech kind of, you know, aesthetic would actually look really interesting if they were down and dirty and grim in my head. And the more I kind of looked at them and started reading the little bits of lore that were out there and kind of understand, I'm like, this is like just the perfect army for me. A, there's a real, they're not very nice. They're not good guys. Which I definitely, you know, was intrigued by. But also the fact that I'm, you know, my nickname was Stig before TT. So like that probably gives you a hint about some stuff about me. So yeah, the idea of the machines, and you know, that was just too perfect. Seemed absolutely perfect. And so, yeah, that was kind of like the starting point for it, really. You know, there was definitely some kind of thinking about, well, what armies aren't on the channel very often, because that was also a thing of, hey, if I want to, you know, actually get a game, then these are the only people I know that play 40k. So, yeah, this is how I'm going to have to do it.
Yeah. No, it makes a lot of sense. And they've come out beautifully. I mean, obviously you've got your custodians now as well, which are the bright, shiny boys. Yeah, I mean, your mechanicals are absolutely stunning. Absolutely incredible. Yeah.
And it's interesting because it's a place where, you know, I feel my painting, I would like to think, has come on some way from when it started. But at the same time, I'm still painting the same scheme and trying to figure out ways that I can bring them up when I paint newer units, but still make them cohesive. And I think it always goes to show what difference a base made, because I had to rebase the entire army at one point. The long-term viewers will remember they used to be on snow bases, but one of the fun things with filming is lights and whites don't always work so well.
Yeah.
And so it really didn't kind of, you know, work very well, you know, for on camera. So kind of after having my arm twisted somewhat, we decided, yeah, I will do this. I'll rebase the entire army. But that's certainly helped bridge things, even though I still use some of the very first miniatures that I painted as an adult. I'm filming on Wednesday, so I might even be using some then.
Oh, cool.
So, 6 years later.
Yeah. So do you still paint your, effectively, the studio Admech army to sort of match your aesthetic? Or does some of it go over to Fletch now and Sanger before?
No, with the Admech, that particular Admech, that is exclusive. Technically, it's my army.
Nice.
So that's my personal army. I have no idea how many points it is at this point, but it's very large. But yeah, no, that one is all mine. So Fletcher's paint queue, A, would be ridiculous. And B, he doesn't enjoy the Admech models because they're far too detailed. He hates them. Mainly because he's brilliant, and therefore he would do every single cable to the perfection, whereas I might just, it's brass now, that's fine. I've definitely got away with hiding some details that, you know, that other people would definitely pick out, but my hand shakes far too much for that. That one is exclusively mine. The Custodes, obviously, we've now got our beautiful studio Custodes army, so that one's there. My gold version is currently at home. It's the only army I've at home. The rest of everything else in the studio.
Yeah.
But that's mainly because, you know, the odd tournament I've been to relatively recently.
Yeah.
Maybe a year ago.
Just
thinking how long ago. Yeah, a while ago. Meant I had to have them. So they are here. And we do have such a beautiful Custodes army.
Yeah.
And that's fair enough. So Fletch paints for those. But the Admech is all me. Mm-hmm. So we'll see what happens when a new book comes out. If there's loads of new units, apologies if it takes a while for me to get to them all.
it is the way that it is. But
yeah.
You sort of alluded to it there. Do you get a chance to play much outside of the channel these days, or is it almost always for the channel?
It is almost exclusively for the channel at the moment. That's not, you know, I was due to do a tournament a few weeks ago, really, but I had to drop out for something last minute, which is a bit of a shame. So I was really looking forward to that, which was a little RTT. I'm kind of other work has been very, very busy recently, so it's been tough to do anything else. But hopefully that's kind of, I'm off the over the cusp of that a little bit, so might get a little bit occasionally. I work in London despite not living in London for my other work. So I'm very fortunate that one of my favorite places to play games, which is Bad Moon Cafe, is not too far from where I go regularly. So that is amazing. That place is wonderful. Amazing people that own it and run it and are involved in it. So I'm not affiliated. I just like them. But they're really cool. So hopefully I'll get to play a few more games occasionally there, which would be nice. I'm hopeful. We'll see if it works out. But yeah,
I feel like gaming is always probably one of the things that will take the hit. I know that obviously I had my little one during COVID and got a dog and stuff like that, and even for a while, there's probably about a good year where I didn't do anything more hammer related. But yeah, coming back into it, it was like the painting was the easiest. Even like making this podcast is much easier than going and playing a game. You've got to get to wherever you're playing a game unless you can do something at home. And then games take a long time. I mean, even without recording, given how long it takes to record, even like a normal game with my mate, I could play like 3 or 4 hours easily.
It's a big family commitment as much as anything when you do have those things. So yeah, and that's why things like tournaments are amazing, because it allows you to kind of get that kind of month's worth of games in a day or two, which is incredible. I do really love doing that sort of stuff. I am hopeful I'll get a bit more of that. Also, I'll get some of that fix when we start doing our tournaments. So, so even if I'm not playing, which I probably wouldn't be able to, because Lawrence would kill me, but it would
be being everybody in the room and Lawrence like, getting the guests out here.
No, it's just more the fact of too embarrassing when I get beaten by everybody. But just because I say a lot of the experience of tournaments is the joy for me. So actually, doing our own and working them will be a big part of that as well. Anyway, so I'll be lucky with that. But yeah, we'll see. And it's not always the case, but more often than not, I'm filming one day a week anyway. So largely most days that's a gaming day. It's very rare that it's been something else. I did a bit of scenery, terrain building for Fletch relatively recently. But that was more of a kind of, one off as opposed to the regular. So normally, because of trying to kind of get my games in, I'm filming like once a week, where possible. So I get my itch scratched, as it were.
It just takes about 10 times longer to film a single game.
I could get an entire RTT in one game, but hey ho.
Yeah, I think a lot of people don't realize that when it comes to sort of YouTube stuff, like, because obviously a lot of the stuff is edited down, it's all cut down, so you're getting like, I don't know, like, a lot of the TT games are sort of like, what, an hour and a half ish 2 hours maybe, something like that. But actually it takes you guys a full day's worth just to record it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a 9 till 6 if you're lucky. With you're going to have some kind of lunch break, but it depends on how that's going as to whether you're all going to go, we've eaten, should we just get back? Yeah, let's just, because it takes that, and that's three people's full day, with the Servo Skull or Endless Spell doing their bit. Sometimes we can make. They can get, a couple of hours off at the start where they can be doing something else, but vast majority of the time they are, that light's just come back on. Vast majority of the time they are just, that's 3 people for 9 hours, or at least 8.5. And then when things, you get to turn 5 and it's not clear, you got to play that turn 5. So therefore, you're getting out a bit late. It's definitely a, longer than people think, despite the fact we've been doing it for this long, people will never, I don't think, and fair enough, they don't need to, but like, it's definitely one of those things that surprises people when you tell them.
Yeah, and you always sort of see people, I don't know, you see the odd comment every now and again talking about like the quality of it and stuff like that, and why did you concede after this time? And obviously you guys are really good at playing it out, almost irrespective. You kind of get to the point where it's like, this is pretty much either points-wise, it's just not possible, or it's so one-sided that it's like, this isn't a proper game anymore. So like, you guys actually seem pretty good for it, but you see like the old channel, it's like, it's end of turn 2, this game has run its course, let's just call it. But when you're playing 8 or 9 hours and you know that the back four hours are just going to be, I'm going to be rolling dice for the sake of it, like, what's the point?
Yeah, and I think it's interesting because I don't know about other channels at all. I've guested on SM Battle Reports once, but like that does not count as any insight into any other channel. Being a guest is a different thing. But for us, we very much realize we're trying to create entertainment.
Yeah.
Yeah, we are absolutely wanting to play that game and win if we can and do the best that we can and represent that faction and maybe that cool thing that people are talking about wanting to see. But we are trying to create entertainment. We are wanting people to enjoy if they're going to listen or watch us for that time. Well, we need to deserve that. You know, we want to create something that lives up to that for them. You know, people don't have time. So if they're going to spend some of it with us, we want it to be worth it for them. So I think, you know, that's what we'll try and think about, whether the lists are relatively balanced and, you know, armies that maybe are appropriate against each other so that we have a decent chance of creating entertainment out of it. And not, we can't, you know, reality is that we can't waste 4 hours and then go, oh, that's not releasable. Because that's, you know, half a day's work for three people. That's not something we can just do.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense. Okay. Another thing that you've picked up fairly recently is AOS within TT. We spoke about that a lot with Chef and about sort of the origins behind it. But sort of how do you find it compared to 40K? Because this is on the channel was the first time you played AOS, right?
Yeah. So it felt appropriate because, again, technically the first time I ever played 40K was on the channel. So why wouldn't I do the same again? So, you know, why, you know, repeat the mistakes of the past? Yeah, exactly. The only slight difference was that my first ever game of 40K was on YouTube, whereas my first game of AOS was on demand. So, you know, it's slightly less comment section to worry about. But yeah, it was, it's definitely interesting. I've been playing the Ogre Moor Tribes and the, which I've loved. And this is the funny thing. I think Chef talked about this, so you can stop me if he did. But we sort of started looking at this AOS a long, long time ago, and there were some games. There were probably about two or three AOS games way back when, probably going about 4 years, 5 years even. Mm. There were, you know, one or two games, so like a Stormcast game versus somebody, I don't know. And I actually started collecting an Ogre Moor Tribes army, although it wasn't, it wasn't that, it was whatever they were called then. But it was my brain has gone mush as to what they were called then. You know, people, I'm sure everybody listening will know the answer. I'm being dumb. But it was the big beasts, basically. It's basically the army that I'm currently playing in AOS more often than not. And I started, there used to be a start collecting box of them that you could basically buy three of, and that was your army. Or it might even have been three, it might have been two, right? Literally, that was how many you needed. So I bought the army, effectively. I think I had the battle tome, and I had either two or three of these box sets, which was literally was the full army. Didn't start building them for whatever reason. Something else happened. I needed to do something else. And then it kind of was like, hey, we're not going to do this. It doesn't look like we're going to do this for a while. Yeah. Like, we're not going to be in a place to be able to just, you know, suddenly get all the armies. We can't really do it justice without that. And so I kind of ummed and ahed, and then I ended up letting the boxes go to a friend, because it was like, it just seems really wasteful to have them sitting on the shelf where I knew he wanted to get into them. So I was like, here's an army, you know, I paid this much for it, there you go, whatever. So it was a, you know, mates rates kind of deal. Fast forward X amount of years, and we were looking at kind of what was I going to start playing, and it seemed like the best one for me to kind of pick up, because it's really quite simple in terms of an army, and it's just a good way to kind of get into the rule system with the relatively limited amount that I was going to get to play it.
Yeah.
So a good way to kind of focus on it. And because of that, all of that's precursor to me saying, I think that's a good way of, you know, because I've been able to focus on what the game system actually does. And I think it is interesting where I think there's a lot of overlap with some of the synergy kind of plays that you need to do with AOS. Very much built in, you know, in that kind of overlapping of synergies and, you know, all the things that people have complained about with 940k in terms of overlapping of auras and buffs and buffs and buffs. AOS is very much kind of still in that mode, but kind of gets away with it a little bit more.
Yeah.
Maybe because it just is a very brutal game in general that people are like, yeah, that's fine. That's cool.
That's just right. A game. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what it is. But it's been good fun. It's been very good fun. I think it's hilarious when you've got five models on the table and you've got, cool, I've got two shooting attacks. Right, they both missed. Move on. So that's good fun. But it's, you know, at the moment, it's like me playing knights.
Yeah.
Because they're just these big monsters that you go, cool, I'm going to smash this into your army and see what happens.
Yes.
And that's, yeah, it's very much a fun, silly play at this point. I have a friend who's very much into the kind of competitive side of AOS. And I know that, like, he keeps inviting me over for a game day. And one day I'll get to go over there, but I am slightly nervous about the filth that will be on display by all of that. He's all about his zinch and, creates these horrific things. Occasionally I'll get a message saying, hey, I've just found this way I can do 60 mortal wounds in a single turn. And we're like, okay, great. I don't want to play that ever. But yeah, it's definitely an interesting game. I think models wise, I mean, you can't talk about AOS without talking about the models.
Yeah.
Because the model line is just ridiculously cool.
Yep.
And, you know, I have to also, at this point, I'm contractually obliged to blame Fletcher for the fact that I was supposed to do a Squig army and started buying up a Squig army only for him to decide he wanted to do it. So, yeah. But it's all right. I have something else built, but I haven't started painting it yet. So yeah,
okay.
I'll tell you after what that is. But yeah, we'll leave it as a teaser for other.
Yeah, a teaser for that. Yeah, AOS is never something that I got into, which is weird because I was originally fantasy. That was my thing. I had orcs. I had a massive orc army. Absolutely loved them with all their boar boys and the boar chariots and all that good fun stuff. But then I came back into Warhammer at the eighth, very very start of eighth, and I managed to play 40k. So that's what I did. And I honestly, every time that I go to my local shop, I just look at AOS and go, I wish somebody in my group played this because I love them. I love that model range is just incredible.
Yeah, and I love, glad to talk about Boar Boys. I had those in my 40k orcs because they were the savage boar. I can't remember. They were the snake bite guys, essentially, because back in second edition, each clan was its own unit, essentially. So you had a mixed clan army. So it was, they were, that was my favorite. Well, the two favorite units were them and the Blood Axe Commandos. They were my two favorite units in second edition, of which I had the mighty two units of each because that's all I could afford. Yeah, see my previous comments about being poor and not having any money for anything.
Yeah, I do remember playing massively. I think I had like two units of boys, like chopper boys or whatever they were called, and then maybe two units of the arrow boys.
Yep.
And then, yeah, you know, the boars and the boar chariot, and I think that was about it. Or maybe the, what was the shaman called? Is it Wurzag?
Oh.
Something like that. Like Wurzag the Prophet. They've got him in, like, I'm sure they put him out for, like, a re-release metal.
Yeah.
One of those ones recently. The Crash Bandicoot mask.
I remember it. So, I never played Fantasy. The White Dwarf at the time, you know, old people like me, late 80s, early 90s, was such a catalogue, but it was definitely like you would just look through all of these models and go, oh, that guy and that guy, and it's amazing. Yeah, so it was definitely one of those where I used to always look at the fantasy stuff, but even then, maybe I'm misremembering this, but I feel like it looked like a much bigger army. And so I remember thinking, I can't even do this, let alone try and do that as well. And that was even more models.
Yeah.
You know, my army, like I say, I had those two units of cool stuff. And then it was the axe and the chopper and pistol orcs that came in the second edition box that all the same stands, all like this. And the Gretchen with the massive oversized rifle and pointy hats that were ridiculously sharp and used to stab you. Try and pick them up because they died in second. But that was, you know, what was in the second edition box, and then these two units of, I think there were three boars and
that's, you know, come,
five blood axes. That was it, you know. It was like, that was my army. That's all I could afford. So,
yeah.
You know, it was, they're looking at these ranks of fantasy because it just looked amazing. It looked so epic.
Yeah.
But no, could not do that.
It was a lot more. Yeah. It was like when you look at like Empire, the amount of like spearmen, musketeers, and they were always lined. I think you used to have like 40 spearmen in a single unit, and that was a really cheap unit, but like 40 models in crazy.
And you'd have probably been buying them in blister packs still, so they'd have been like, however much they were, a lot of money for us non-rich kids.
I think I remember getting there was like an orc, was it an Orc Empire box for fantasy, and that's where I got like most of mine from. It was a box set, much cheaper, split it with a friend,
It's funny that still happens today.
I've literally just done that with a Leviathan box. You play Nids, I play Space Marines.
Perfect.
That's my tip.
That's the one thing about AbMech and Custodes. We're never going to get a starter box. I'll never get that joy until at some point. Yeah, but no, it's one of those. It does save me money every time there's a big release, though.
Okay. Going back to 40K, obviously, there's been a huge amount of changes from 9th to 10th, for better or for worse, noting that as we're recording this, the podcast went out on Freeview today, almost talking about the state. Really, really good time for this, but how are you sort of finding the state of 10th compared to 9th? And then are you looking forward to any particular changes or anything that might be coming out in the future?
I think it's a really interesting thing, because I think it's really hard to get... I think sometimes it can be hard for people to gauge the difference between the rule set and the rules that they're playing at that current time, whether that be a codex or in this instance indexes. I think the core rule set, I think I started building in 7th, I've played 8th, 9th and 10th. I really think I played 2nd. It was, I was too young and just moving stuff around. So realistically, I feel like I'm in a place to be able to talk to those three systems. I think this is the best core rule set out of the three systems by far.
Yeah.
However, there's still its classic. It's Index Hammer, right? And it's very early, and some of the points are wild in both directions.
Yeah.
It's a very different kind of setup with obviously characters leading units and things like that. And It's an interesting place because I do think some people seem to feel like it's not as killy. I know that was, a stated objective. I don't necessarily agree with that, but I probably also have quite a significant iron in that fire because the AbMech are not survivable. So that maybe kills them as being, it's a quite a killy game when you're playing as AbMech because you're going to die instantly. If someone looks at you. So that's probably, it probably affects my thoughts on that beat. But I actually think the core rule set itself is the best it's been. I think it's going to be that classic thing of when codexes start to come out or as and when they start to do more. And I think they've talked about it on Warcom about doing, I think they're planning to do another balance slate. I think they said in September or something along those lines. And I'm certainly hopeful that we'll get like some balances, in that sense, because more from a points perspective than too much else, because I think it's too early. There's just not enough games being played widely enough to really know rules that need to change.
Yeah.
I know people jump on things like towering and stuff like that. I get why, but.
I'm a knight player, so a chaos knight player, but I didn't think towering was that bad. I think it's the rules that then combined with it when you look at like Imperial Knights and Eldar. I think the way they combined with towering was the issue.
I think the points is probably more of it though, because you think like right now, we're talking as a point where the knights went up a little bit, you probably lost a war dog or something from a list. And that, suddenly that seems to have, lo and behold, that's not as scary as it was.
Yeah.
And I think it's too early to jump on things like that. Like I say, I've been quite open about that. I'm not a massive fan with the index for AbMech in terms of some of the rules at the moment. But even I realized that there's not enough games in it to really know it. I feel like what's more affecting it is the points.
Yeah.
So you can get, right now, you can get 10 Wraithguard with their decal and goodness for 310 points. Or you could have 6 Breaches.
Yeah, that's a hard choice. Really hard choice to make.
So, like, yeah, the points are wild, right? That's what it is. Like, they've kind of misjudged some certain things, and they need the justice, and that's fine. That'll happen. So, you know, it will happen, and I think that will make a big difference. But I think what's interesting is I kind of talked about the fact I was going to go to a tournament relatively recently, and I remember talking to the CEO beforehand, and they were nervous about whether they were going to move from 9th to 10th.
Mm.
And the tournament was due to land, I think it landed something like 3 or 4 weeks after 10th launch.
Okay.
And they made a decision via their community, so via the people that were going, to move to 10th and jump over to it. Because it was unequivocal, yeah, we're all loving this, let's just do it. That'd be brilliant. And lo and behold, everything I've heard from the event, well, they all had an amazing time. And I think so from the majority of people, like, it's just such a better place.
Yeah.
I think you'll hear a lot of noise from the top line, highest competitive end, but it's a lot more noise, so therefore it will make other people question their own thoughts on it. It isn't always the case, but like I say, from that kind of high end side, it's just not enough data. They can't really say, because there's nowhere near as many games played at the moment as there have been at any point in either 8th or 9th to be able to really gauge what do we need to change, you know, what do we need to do better. So I feel like it's in a great place. I feel like I hope that if I've not made that up and they aren't saying that they're doing something in September, I hope there's some points that get adjusted. I don't really want them to do too much more because it's one of those where it feels like they've taken the top off the Eldar, which is great. Maybe some points changes the other way for them because they get a lot of L's for a dying race.
Yeah.
But you know, if you could, you know, tweak some of that down, maybe tweak a few, increase them so they have smaller armies.
Yeah.
Maybe tweak some other armies, not just Admech, but please Admech, to get some better points. Then, that would be lovely. But like the majority of armies are in this kind of middle period pack, right? You know, if you take out things like Eldar, GSC, Custodes, you know, Knights-ish, maybe? Imperial, probably more. Nice. Yeah, if you sort of take that lot out and you take out Death Guard and Admech, you've got a big lot of armies in the middle that all, we're fine against each other. It's all good. Something along those lines.
Yeah, no, I mean, that makes a lot of sense to me. It's one of those weird ones where people always sort of complain about the rules and I saw this on Facebook of all places. Someone sort of pointed out, someone said something like, the wolf cavalry from Space Wolves. They were like, oh, they're rubbish. They're awful. This was before the points came out. They were like, they're absolute rubbish. It's like, compared to 9th, their rules aren't as good. And then some guy was like, but if they're like 5 points a model, you're going to take them.
Yep.
Because they're incredible value.
Yep.
And so, I think even with perceived terrible rules, if they're pointed correctly, people are still going to take them. I've got a dog joining
us. Sorry, everybody. Listeners will be very confused by the fact that a dog has decided that she wanted to get a bit of attention. So she is joining. Hello.
More dogs need to be on this podcast. this is good.
She's now like, oh, I regret my decision.
What am I doing here? Yeah. Yeah, I think by adjusting those points, you're going to make things more appealing. They put points up on the Eldari Knights, so less people taking them. So yeah, if it's, you can get the balance that way. For me, it's probably the right way of doing it.
Yeah, absolutely. Because, as you say, you know, before I interrupted by a small dog appearing, points are only, rules are only what they are, depending on the context of their points.
Yeah.
And you remove the context of the points, then it's kind of, irrelevant. It's one of those things where you're seeing all these armies take these 35 point execution or exact or whatever they're called, Imperial agents, small units, cheap because they just do something for being able to stand on a back objective and go, okay, that's fine.
Yeah, I get 5 victory points probably a turn for having a 35 point model.
It's a 35 point unit. They are the rules do virtually nothing, but it doesn't matter because they're really cheap and they just sit there and do nothing.
Yeah.
And get you 5 points a turn. They're brilliant at that point.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you take them? You know. So it makes perfect sense, but it's only given the context. So if you kind of you don't need to suddenly throw out all the brand new rules that the rules writers have pulled their hair out trying to write in a short period of time. You just need to maybe think about the points a little bit, and if they adjust that, the context of that unit changes massively.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Well, we'll move away from Warhammer as a game a little bit now, and we'll sort of move on to sort of the second section, which is kind of more about the community side, content creation, whatever you want to call it. But so you've been part of TT, I'm going to say properly, for want of a better term, for nearly 3 years. It'll be 3 years, what, in two months? Next month, something like that? It'll be 3 years? So, and yeah, obviously you were on the channel for a long, long time before that. You kind of alluded to it already, basically since the start. So I've kind of got a twofold question. How did that original connection happen, which you've kind of already talked about, but it'd be good to get sort of a bit more of that story. And then sort of what drove you towards joining the team on a more proper, permanent, whatever you want to call it, basis?
So I guess I've kind of talked to you. First it was supposed to be just a painting thing. And then it was like, if I'm going to do this, the only way I'm going to play a game is if I suck it up and realize that I'm going to have to be on camera.
Let Lawrence film you.
Yeah, basically. And so when I started building up my very first paint, I painted my first Skitarii as an adult in the old studio in London, in Clapham, in Lawrence and his wonderful now wife's flat, under instruction as to like, you know, as we kind of figured out like a scheme, and I kind of had these ideas, and he helped me think about kind of, you know, base layer and shade and all that kind of jazz to kind of make this kind of work. And obviously he's thinking about, is it going to look good on camera? And and so, you know, kind of been involved, and then I carried on and painted up, you know, slowly painted up stuff. And as I'd said, you know, it was all in the build up to getting married. And once I got married, lo and behold, I painted a lot more after that because I had a bit more time again. And so it kind of, you know, fell true to be able to play my first game. And Bone had just come on at this point, you know, was there kind of, you know, as a guest, like all of us as were. And another random Australia by the name of Sanger had literally, I think the week before, played his first game on the channel.
Okay. Yeah.
And so it was set up that I would play Rob as my first game. So his second game, I think, and my first game. I'd gone over once before and Lawrence had like pointed a camera at me and we kind of rolled some dice just to make sure I didn't completely freak out. We played like a turn or something like that. And it was just that idea of just making sure that I wasn't going to just, you know, be very unsure about being on camera, etc. And then, the first game was it. And I say it's on YouTube for those that are that way inclined. You can see very old studio, very old or very young me and Rob that don't know what we're doing. But I still remember that game. And I remember, you know, it being like an epic showdown. I feel like, if I remember correctly, it was there was a kind of epic moment where Belisario's Call and a Librarian Dread like faced off at the end, and I think they killed each other in combat. And if I remember, something along those lines. So that was cool, and I kind of just, you know, I would guest as often as I could, basically.
Yeah.
And you know, it'd normally be most of the time like, yeah, I'd, you know, once a week or something, maybe I'd then have a break and it'd be a couple of a week later or what have you. Just when was working, when it was available, when it was, Lawrence was still doing two jobs effectively at that time and what have you. That became a little bit more regular, you know, as Lawrence was able to kind of move away from the other work and focus on TT. So that was kind of regular. And then obviously the big move was probably the kind of, that was, you know, at that point it did look, there was a sort of unknown as to whether Beard and I were going to be able to get down as much as we could, because we were both living in London at the time. And so it was definitely like a little bit like, we're not sure how this is going to work. So it was I think like we even kind of did like a, we played a game and I feel like it was like an almost goodbye on one of the in outros as we kind of weren't sure when we were going to get to play again, you know, when we're going to get to get down. And then obviously, as kind of has been, you know, talked about previously, you know, lo and behold, neither of us could get away.
Lawrence wouldn't let you. He had his claws in him at
that point. Finally, we succumbed to his advances. No, we both separately realized that we needed to keep doing this. This isn't something we're going to let go. Yeah. And so the kind of long commutes for both of us started. He's now obviously there and has moved permanently. For me, it's not as far a commute as it used to be, but it's still a good hour and a half drive every time I film. So, yeah, but it's part of my life at this point. And, you know, my very patient wife understands how important it is to me.
Yeah, three hour round trip. That's quite a commute for your local gaming store.
Yeah. I mean, people in Canada will be like, that's literally the corner shop. I don't know what you're talking about.
I do that every day too to school.
Exactly. And, you know, and funnily enough, you know, it sounds silly, but I do think about that sort of stuff when I'm home, because obviously, you know, we're very UK centric, and so we often think in that space. But like, actually, like, so many of my friends that like, you know, that's normal. That's getting to work is an hour and a half. So I've done that commute regularly, you know, that kind of level of commute in the past for other work. So it's like, why would I not do it for this work? So, you know, when this one's the most fun it can possibly be.
I mean, that's the thing. It probably takes me an hour and a half, 2 hours to get into London. I'm Bristol based. So, yeah. I can jump on a train. I've been in London like an hour and a half, 2 hours. And I'm like, oh, that's a really, really far away. I don't really want to do it. Like, since I started this podcast, I've been to Badminton Cafe once. And it's been like half a year. I'm like, yeah, I should go there more often. It's a really cool place. I'm just like, so far away.
But,
yeah.
But yeah, so we're, so I'm based in Buckinghamshire Way now. Yeah. So, about an hour outside of London, so just sort of near the edge of Oxfordshire. And so, yeah, and we're the studio now, the new studio, is just outside Chippenham. So, yeah, it's about an hour and a half on a commuter-type journey. But like I say, great way of getting through Horse Heresy, Audible books.
Yeah.
Because I've got the time.
Or this podcast.
Oh, yeah, on this podcast. full disclosure, I actually listened to the one with Chef last Wednesday. When I was going, which was very embarrassing when he then got in the car at lunchtime and saw his name on the dashboard. But, you know, but that's a problem for me.
No, that was a really good episode. That's been, Quipster, who is my very first episode, he has been like number one listened to, most listened to for all this time. Chef came in and he's like, he's my first episode to go over 300 downloads.
Oh, don't tell him that, because he'll like, his head will get too big. Like,
that's right. He didn't listen to this, so it's fine. But yeah, like, his episode just like shot up to number one. I was just like, what? It's the first time it's happened. It was just people got mad for it. Absolutely loved that episode. So
it was a great episode. I very much enjoyed it.
I'm glad. Yeah. Chef made it all. I just sit here and ask random questions.
Well, it's all about the random questions. Being a good interviewer is a big part of a good interview.
Yeah, I'll claim that. Definitely. Yeah, thanks. Okay. So obviously you've been around the channel for a long, long time now. Not to make you feel too old. I'm sorry.
Well, this lighting's good because it doesn't show how grey I am. Which is it's got more and more as you go through the old back catalogue.
I just shave my head. It's so much easier. It gets rid of all the greys. Doesn't matter how many there are. It's all gone.
Well, I used to, you know, for a long time, this is way before PP days, I always had a shaved head. Not a fully bicked head, but a shaved head. And my beard was always longer than my head. But yeah. Clippers were my best friend for a long time, it was just easier. And then, I got teased into, why don't you just grow your hair? I'm like, okay.
Yeah, I wouldn't grow my hair. It's shaved for a reason, that way. Fair. Yeah. Obviously, so you've been in the channel for a long time.
Sorry, I segued very randomly.
Nice. And just into hair. This podcast is about everything. I've done finance in the past before as well, so it's fine.
Right.
But yeah, I feel like, so since I've been watching, so I started watching just before 8, because I was kind of like, well, I'm going to get into it. I'm going to start watching videos. So I started watching, you guys were one of the first channels, probably the second channel after Mini War Gaming.
It's traditional.
Yeah, it feels like that's near enough a standard, but I feel like it's changed quite a lot over the last couple of years. Probably sort of like, you look at like Bone leaving and Sanger, and then bringing in like Katie and Bard, and and people like that. How do you find it now compared to when you were a guest on the show?
It's a funny one because I think right back to, literally back to those first ones in the first studio, second studio if you count it,
yeah,
non-kitchen. Every single time I've ever filmed, I hate to say it because it makes them, sound even, you're getting even bigger head than normal. But Lawrence has been very driven about, we want the quality to be the best it can be.
Yeah.
From the off, it's been about us constantly looking for ways to improve and ways to make it better quality, to, make it so people will enjoy it more, like really fine tuning everything. Us, like, thinking about, how did I appear on camera there? Is there something I can do better? Like, it's funny when you see, you see actors talk about hating to watch themselves on camera. And, I hate watching myself on camera, but I do it because it helps me realize where I can be better.
Yeah.
And so it's one of those things that I think, because from the off, we've been trying to get things better and better and better. So I think that's always been a thing. And obviously, initially, we were all just mates.
Yeah.
But there's always been, even through a group of mates, we've been focused on trying to make the best thing we possibly can be. And so I think with Katie coming in first, and then Fletcher, and then Bart, it's all the same. Like, their focus, is the same. And they've become part of our friendship group in that sense. So we're very fortunate that, although, it's a working, it's a professional working company, we are still fortunate that we're all really close and we all hang out and spend time and chat and tell each other stupid jokes and do all that stuff that you see some of on camera. You just do anyway, because that's just who we are. So it, that element has just not changed. I think those are the two foundations of what's important for me with TP, is that the constant aim to evolve and be better and want to create a better product. And the fact that we have fun, I think that is all. I think we've always kind of said that if you're not having fun, it's going to show.
Yeah,
it's going to show on camera. Yeah. And I think, not just ourselves, but I think hobby channels in general, because this is a social game, it's a social hobby. I think for those that maybe the gaming group's not very wide, or maybe they can't interact with it that often, or it's maybe more than an hour and a half away. Hobby channels kind of give you a way to get into that gaming group.
Yeah.
Be part of an extended gaming group that could be hundreds of thousands of players and be involved in that community element. So I think that doesn't happen if people think you're bored or don't care or aren't enjoying yourself, or you're just feeling so self-conscious about being on camera that it gets in the way. And there's definitely, you've seen people that are really good intentioned, really want to do it, but it's just not, they struggle with it. Yeah. And that's, that can be, I can't imagine how hard that would be if that's what they really want to do, but they're just really struggling with that kind of piece about being on camera. You've got to find ways to kind of get out of your own way from it, if that's really what you want to do. And if it's not, it's okay. You don't have to.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I think I answered that question. I'm not sure.
No, you did. Yeah, you definitely did. Yeah, it definitely comes across. I mean, Laurie's obviously a really sort of driven person, and Fletch and sort of Chef sort of said something very similar. A lot of it is sort of driven by Lawrence's view on how he wants the channel to be, and it just feels like everyone that gets added to that group is there because they're fantastic. That's a known. But B, because Lawrence can kind of see them as the next step to improving that quality and to improving that sort of group and evolve the dynamic. So it maybe encompasses more people.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's one of those where hopefully with people subscribe to on demand, it gives us more opportunities to do more things. And obviously we've now, got this new space that we're going to be able to start doing events, relatively soon, relatively being important, word that you know, and they, all those things are, you know, in the hope to be able to do more and be able to, yeah, absolutely want to get bigger and, you know, and be able to do. But yeah, it's hilarious to think that this, you know, started in my mate's kitchen. So like it's definitely something that, you know, we'll continue to do. But you know, I think, you know, I'm definitely, it's interesting. What I feel, I've used this word already, but I feel very privileged because I wouldn't have got through the process Katie had to go through. Not a hope in hell I would have got through that, to be able to kind of get that job interview process was intense. And it was because we had to do, we definitely felt a responsibility that if we were going to add somebody to the group at this point as a full-time employee to the business, that we had to make the right choice.
Yeah.
And so that was really a responsibility to get that right. And having had no involvement whatsoever in it, I feel like we got it right three times with all three of those.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
I think they're incredible. And embarrassing when I say that to their face. So yeah, it's definitely, I think, you know, they have brought things to us, absolutely. But they're also, we've got things from them because of the fact that they're part of our friendship group now. And, yeah. And you know, we're better for having them.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, that makes so much sense. I mean, have you got any advice? You've been doing this for, like I say, a long time. You kind of talked about there about having that presence on camera and about sort of how you go about doing it. Have you got any advice for people looking to do something similar or to try and build that community?
Well, I think when people ask about it, I think we all pretty much say the same thing, which is, how do I create a YouTube channel? Create a YouTube channel. Just do it. Like, yeah. You're the example, right? You wanted to do a podcast. You've done a podcast.
Yeah.
People listen to it. Like, that's like, and if two people listen to it, like, that would be, you'd achieve, right? Because people listen to it. Like, you wanted to do it, so you did it. And that's exactly what happened. Like, for us was, you know, Lawrence wanted to do it, so it happened. And he just didn't give up. We've just scaled a long time and we're fortunate in our timing. I'm sure there's some good planning on his side as well. But no, yeah, there's lots of good fortune and some timing and some really hard work and very smart thinking. But it comes from that thing of just starting it. Yeah. And I think that point, you know, I've said about, like, it's never fun listening to yourself or watching yourself on camera, but it is literally the only way you're going to get better. So if you want to do it, you do it. Yeah. And then you don't worry about if anybody watches it, because if one person watches it, you've achieved. You know? And then watch it yourself and then see where you get from there. What made you cringe? Why did it make you cringe? Mm. Like, could you have explained that slightly better? Was the camera a bit too shaky, or were you going for that edgy, look? You know, was that intentional? Fine, it was. Cool. You pick your vision, but like, go with what you intend. And does it achieve what you intend? What would you do to get it there? And just constantly look at that to kind of, you know, because comments will tell you stuff. Comments will tell you stuff, but no one's ever going to tell you what's great. So you've also got to watch it and go, I like this. This is what I wanted it to do. And it does that. So I need to do more of that. And less of this other thing that made me feel uncomfortable. So, you know, whatever, whether that's a law video or, you know, bat rep or whatever it might be, you've got to be your best worst critic.
Yeah.
To be able to really kind of analyze. And then you just get people watching it by sending it to your gaming group and ask them to send it to their friends. And lo and behold, you'll have an Instagram and all sorts of things. And, you know, it will happen, but it'll happen if you really want it and if you put as much time as you can do into it. And the time frame will be its time frame, but, you know, you've just got to commit to it. And that doesn't mean you spend, you know, 40 hours every week on it, but whatever you can commit to, you commit to, and you just keep getting better at it.
Yeah.
That's the only way to do it, as far as I think. In my very humble opinion.
No, it's absolutely sound. Yeah, it echoes a lot around what I've sort of done. Yeah, you're right. I wanted to make a podcast, so I made one, and I cheated a little bit and I created an interview podcast where I got really cool people on and then just piggybacked off their success.
But that's not cheating. That's just like you. I mean, I listen to a lot of podcasts. I do. I like the format. you know, lo and behold, we've been talking about doing one for a long time, you know, surprise, surprise. But we waited until we could do a certain thing, but that's fine.
Yeah.
But, you know, there are so many out there. Like, there is a podcast that I listen to quite a lot called Grim After Dark, and they always make the joke that everybody in 40K has got a podcast. But I like the joke. It makes me laugh, but it's also not true because there's loads of people that want one, but they haven't always just done it. And the best way to do it is just do it. You want to make a podcast? Make a podcast. You want to make a YouTube channel? Just make a YouTube channel. Just do it. Everybody's got a phone of some description these days. You know, that is enough to be able to do it. Lawrence made a choice to be able to go for a camera with a microphone to start off with. But that was because these weren't anywhere near as good as they are now, right? Yeah. So, like, at that point, it was different. Now there's almost no excuse because, you know, almost everybody has a smartphone that is better quality than the cameras that we filmed on back in the day were.
Yeah, I mean, I picked up my microphone. I think that was probably the only thing I really picked up. Obviously, I've kind of slowly picked up other bits here and there and stuff like that. But my microphone was kind of the only thing. So I was like, if I'm going to make it, I want my sound quality to be all right.
Yep.
So I bought a microphone and that's been kind of it. I have my laptop. I have the internet.
You mean you didn't get the internet just for this?
I mean, I have upgraded my internet since because I got really tired of waiting forever for it to download and then upload. So I have improved my internet. It happened that there was a really good offer at the same time.
Oh, wow, perfect. Yeah.
Yeah. So I've now got fiber, which is fantastic.
Yeah, and I'm sure the family are benefiting from the podcast because of that.
Exactly. And that's what I tell the other half all the time.
Yeah, exactly.
Plus, like, it gets me out of her hair. So she's happy about that.
Yeah, I get that.
But yeah, no, completely accurate. I mean, like, I have a fairly limited amount of time having a young family and stuff like that, but I probably put somewhere between sort of 4 to 6-ish hours a week doing editing and stuff like that and getting stuff ready. But that's the time that I could put it together. If I could do more, I would. Originally, I wanted to kind of do a weekly podcast. Now it's a fortnightly, but I say if that's the time that I've got available, then yeah, and it seems to be doing okay. So.
And I think with stuff like that, I think the algorithm gods always prefer a regular thing anyway.
Yeah.
So being realistic with yourself, I think is probably the other thing that, you know, would also be the recommendation. If you can put out a show on YouTube or on a podcast every 3 weeks and that's what you can commit to that. Just stick to it and just build it up. Like even like people like the Independent Characters, like one of the biggest ever podcasts. Yeah, no idea on the numbers. But they, you know, they always did every 2 weeks. That was always their ridiculously long episodes. But they're every 2 weeks. That's what you could do. And that's fair enough. Yeah. You know, you don't have to be every single week if you can't do it. And I just think you don't burn yourself out.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's
not me
talking to you because that'd be very patronizing. I mean,
no, you're right. You're right. I mean, I got, like, so when I was talking about my painting, that was, so I took a holiday. People that listen kind of know this. I took a holiday and it was like in that period of doing loads and loads of painting. I was coming up to like that doubles tournament actually that I did tons of painting going into that. I was making the podcast. I was doing quite a lot and I had like a week's holiday where I just went down to the South Coast, stayed in the caravan for a week, did some walking, didn't do anything, nothing hobby related, didn't take anything with me. And I came back and I was like, I was sort of hanging by a thread on the hobby side of things. I wasn't enjoying editing, which I had been. Painting, I was kind of like, I was just going through the motions. But yeah, like it's that burnout is a real, real thing, even if it's a hobby. So it's all really good advice. Okay. Something that I've kind of not asked the others really about is obviously you guys do a lot more than just recording games. There's a ton more that sort of goes on behind the scenes. Can you sort of explain a little more about the sort of dynamics or the roles of the team that sort of sit behind that, so all the work that goes in behind making those videos?
Well, I make good tea. So
that's a very important role, to be fair.
So I think there's kind of a mixture of things. Obviously, Fletcher paints
religiously.
So he's almost exclusive that. Although if he's doing a painting video, he's doing the painting video, so he films that himself as well.
Okay.
And so that's kind of, you know, those kind of elements. You tend to find the others all edit, so they all edit. I don't because of time and because I'm there much less. so they all are involved in editing, which also is kind of like gives. I can sometimes watch a show and know who's edited it before it gets the credits. You know, because there's, you know, some little things. We have a kind of formula, as it were, a template of how we want things, but you can still sort of tell certain people a little bit, for good or for ill. But so they're all involved in that. You tend to find Beard does quite a lot of the narrative writing stuff, that he really enjoys that that side. So he'll often be, you know, quite heavily involved in that kind of elements. Chef is also very much involved in kind of, you know, a lot of our kind of more tracking stuff. I mean, I'm sure it comes as no surprise to anyone that Chef enjoys a good spreadsheet. Kind of, you know, for us to be able to kind of, you know, try and think about balancing when armies have been on and those kind of things, but also involvement in future tournaments in terms of like kind of creating some of the packs that we've started thinking about for those and bits and pieces that I'm probably not allowed to talk about. So, you know, a lot of those kind of, you know, things. And, you know, in the leagues that we've done, he kind of created a lot of the stuff for doing all the scoring and bits like that. And those that are on demand subscribers, well, actually anybody can get these just from our website, but he does a lot of the written articles as well. So Chef writes a lot as well. So in the past when we've had Codex releases, he'll kind of do those. Those were always great to read. I'm probably saying nice things about him, but which is painful for me. I'll often look at those, or I used to often look at those if I was picking up an army, because the nature of what we do obviously means that yes, I'm, you know, very much known to play, you know, AdMech and Custodes and Knights a little bit. But I'll also, you know, dabble in Orcs or Guard or whatever it might be. And I have a bit of a okay ability to just pick up an army and play it for the first time. And I do actually, you know, I was used to read those articles as a good starting point of doing it. So he's a lot involved in that. And they're kind of good to kind of, you know, do those. So he gets involved in a lot of that kind of written things as well. And officially, Lawrence will only have a cup of coffee if Bard's made it. So that's also very important and part of his job description. Not so pleased with anybody else's. I've even gone so far as pretended the coffee was mine, but he knew instantly that it was actually not. It was mine, not Bard's. But you know,
that's why Bard was employed.
I think there was an extra hidden part of the interview process that no one knew about.
Make me a cup of coffee.
But yeah, and then kind of Katie and Beard do a lot of the kind of social aspects, social media things as well. So everyone's very busy apart from me, as you've noticed. But
now you're very busy doing everything else in your life.
So there is that, I suppose. So yeah, I'll accept.
And your hour and a half commute to the office.
Yeah, I mean there is that too, but you know that doesn't count.
Okay. I'll ask one more question in this area, and I have to ask it because I asked Fletch and Chef, so I have to ask you. So who's your favourite at TT?
Oh, that's impossible to say. Gwotty. Gwotty's my favourite. That's asking a father of seven, who's your favourite child?
Chef and Fletch said the exact same thing, so I'm glad this is keeping this trend going.
that's not possible, and this is a funny thing. As I say, it is a workplace, it is a business, it is all those things, and there's not that many businesses that I know of where you can't pick a favorite person out of the business.
That is normal.
To be fair, like Lawrence and Beard used to be my favourite people out of the business that we all work together at. So, there you go. But at TT, everybody's equal.
Yeah, no, it's a good answer, and it's the exact same answer that you gave. So I feel like I have to ask it at this point. It'd be unfair not to. It's
traditional now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, for sure. I'll sort of move away from that stuff now. I'll talk about you as a real person. I know, it's incredible. This is the thing. Obviously, you play Warhammer a lot. it's part of what you do. So have you got sort of any other sort of hobbies, or sort of what do you do outside of Warhammer to chill out or to get away from the game?
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely so there's hobbies in the days gone by, and then there's kind of current stuff, I suppose. So I was a drummer by trade. That was what I used to do back in the day. So you could argue that my hobby became my living once before. and then injury stopped that quite young. So, very young. So that kind of fell away. I still have, some kits, but not all of my stuff. But playing is pretty much a no-go because of damaging my arms and hands. So it's a bit of a problem.
Yeah.
But I've also always been into my cars, classic cars, particularly classic minis, especially.
Nice.
I still own a classic mini that I've had for 22 years, and I've built several engines for, and it is ridiculous. It's always funny when people say that Warhammer is an expensive hobby, because I'm like, you should try classic cars or cars in general. They're a really expensive hobby.
Yeah,
I've spent less on all my Warhammer hobby than I spent on one of several engine builds on my mini. So there's scales of these hobbies, right? But that's that is slightly to one side at the moment. I need to do some work to get the car back on the road, so I'll do that at some point. Hopefully next summer. That's the next summer's aim. So
if
we'll see.
If we can finally get some good weather in the UK.
Yeah, exactly. I've got the car's in storage at the moment, so it's got to come back here so I can do some recommissioning, get that back on the road, which would be fun. But yeah, so that kind of world. But realistically, the last couple of years, my wife and I moved to the house that we're in now in 2020, because that's always a good time to move during pandemic. And we've been doing DIY and gardening and all those things, and that's definitely taken up a lot of time. And I've, don't get me wrong, I've very much enjoyed it. So that can be, that can be a thing. He's kind of got into his gardening over the last couple of years, weirdly.
He can do my garden if he wants. Mine is awful at the minute.
I think he's better than me. But I did, I built some raised flower beds recently, been doing stuff like that. So that's been a thing. Probably taken away from painting more models. So, terrible idea. I don't recommend it. Just paint more. But no, that sort of thing has definitely been kind of, takes time when I'm not doing Warhammer-y things.
Yeah. I mean, the Stig nickname makes sense.
It definitely, it came from the fact that I was at one point preparing a car for the track days, and that's when someone misheard my name and I was born, as it were. It's been there ever since. So it's just a thing.
Yeah, I had a classic mini, classic-ish. It wasn't a true classic back at university. I loved that car so much. Yeah, I've just retired a hoodie that had slight battery acid staining on the front. The amount of, for some reason, that car just killed batteries. I think I went through 5 or 6, and I just couldn't work out what was killing them. I still love that car. There was to this day, I remember once I lived in a house. It was a student house, and we needed to mow the lawn. And being 6 students, none of us owned a lawnmower. None of us even knew where to go on from, and I was like, right, I have to go get a lawnmower. And I had a mini, and I was like, I don't know how I'm getting a lawnmower in this car. I just took out the front seat. I was like, I'll take out the passenger side seat. It's like 2 volts, so easy to get out and then put the lawnmower in there. Everyone was looking at me like, what are you doing? I was like,
perfect.
It's the perfect fit.
My classic mini is a mini Clubman Estate. This is going to, we're getting real niche. We're in a niche podcast, and we're going more niche now. So it's a mini Clubman Estate from 1979.
Oh.
And I say, in a previous life, when I was a drummer for a living, I used to carry my kit around in this and gig around London and everywhere. And that's why it's the estate, because you can fit a kit in super easily. So it was always hilarious, because being a drummer, you're the first one to arrive at a gig and the last one to leave. And regularly, 2-3 in the morning, you're burning through London. My sister at the time used to live in London, and occasionally, if a gig would go way too late for me to journey out of London again, I used to turn up at her flat which was fine, apart from the fact that the straight-through exhaust would set off all the car alarms in the carriage.
Yes.
So, yeah, that was a thing. But it's now far more sensible because it's just supercharged with a Weber 45. So it's fine. It's much more sensible. For those that don't know anything about cars, all of that was gibberish. So, you know, it's a triple Wraith Knight build. Yeah, that's what it was. No.
Yeah, Minis and will always be my favourite car.
Yeah. Sure. They're brilliant. In the days gone by, one of my good friends is a classic Mini specialist. Yeah, funny that. And this is years before TT, but I used to spend one day off every week. I'd just go and help out his garage.
Nice.
Because it was just a great way of just getting, clearing my head. A lot of the same stuff that I found myself having to, finding an alternative solution down the line. That was my fix for, just because he's a one-man garage. So, occasionally you've got, one extra person, but most of the time I'd go there and it'd just be me and him and the radio and we'd be working on two different cars. He'd just say, do that. And I'd go, okay. it was just great from a kind of, I loved that creative physical aspect, from a kind of both from a mental health and just general perspective.
Yeah.
And kind of, that's where, 40K has kind of scratched that itch to a large degree as well. That's why the artistic side for me is important as well. And the physicality of creating something, project managing and building several iterations of this car over the years and other projects for other cars and things along the way have always been kind of a really key thing for me. So it's getting to do something similar on a slightly smaller scale.
Slightly,
a lot cheaper. So I don't complain about the money.
Okay. Well, that was sort of my last broad question. I have one last question. And if you listen to the Chef episode all the way through, you know what this is going to be. So you can only pick one person in the community. Don't have to be Instagram, YouTube, or anything like that. It could just be someone that you've played with before. So if they could be the only person that you could play Warhammer with for the rest of time, who would it be?
Beard. So, yes, full disclosure, I did hear this question. So I was like, oh, that's a cool question. Beard is, he's a very unique individual. And love him to pieces. He can play every type of game. I think Beard gets a funny, some people think that he's this big doofus. And it's okay for us to call him that, but it's not for anyone else.
Yeah.
But he's not. He's a really good player. He's learned a lot over the years, but he can play anything, really. His love of the game, he doesn't enjoy the competitive side very much, and that's fair enough, but he can definitely play a strong list. And he's smart with it. He's not, so he knows how to, if he's playing an army, he knows, then he absolutely has, will work out a good game plan. So, but if you want to play that kind of game, he's your man. He can definitely do it. But the narrative stuff and the fun you'll have playing a game with him is just incredible. It always has been. And he's one of my best friends in the world. So, if I'm only allowed to play with one guy ever again, then I'd take him.
Yeah, makes sense.
I have to say though, and he won't listen to me, so it's fine. Every time I play Chef, I do learn something from a Chef game. Every time he I know he doesn't like competitive play, but he has the brain for it. He just also chooses sometimes to go against that because he'll do a cool thing when he'll do a whirling dervish because he wants to. He knows it's not the most efficient thing, but he wants to do it, so he'll do it. But, he is the jankiest of players. Will always enjoy finding a little trick. So you'll never get a dull game with Chef. It's impossible to have a dull game with Chef. He'll always find something new that you won't expect. So, so I've kind of cheated and stole two answers. But, if it's one, it'll be Beard. If I get a little leeway, I'd always squeeze a game in with Chef every game.
I mean, Beard makes perfect sense. Sort of the story, the backstory behind you getting back into 40K and joining the channel, it makes perfect sense. So, it's a good answer. And he seemed like a good both chef and beer team, like amazing opponents to play against. So yeah, it's a solid answer.
Yeah, and I this is the thing. I could now give you reasons for everybody else. That's the thing. And I could give you reasons for my friend Hendrik and various other people that no one's ever seen on channels. Yeah. But like, yeah, it's that's the nature of it, right? I think it goes back to that thing. You get to spend 2.5 hours or more, you know, in the company of somebody. Like, you're going to get to know them. So that can make some amazing lifelong friendships.
Yeah. And you know you've got definitely one thing in common because you both sat there playing exactly. Game of Warhammer.
So you chose to spend your time doing this.
Exactly. And so, yeah, there's always, I've spoken about that with so many of the guests, is this sort of idea of we're all bound around this central core thing of Warhammer, and it's built this incredible community around it with so many people, with so many different views on life and extra hobbies and stuff like that. And everyone's sort of really willing to share that. I mean, look, let's look at Katie and her addiction to climbing and the fact that she's pulling everybody else along with her. But yeah, it's just stuff like that. It seems like a great community. It's all bound around this one central thing of we play Warhammer.
It's so funny though, because I'm literally realizing this and remembering this all the time. I went to, this is probably supposed to be the end and I'm going to segue off to the
keep going.
So I remember, I went to university in Derby. So okay. Across the road from a certain place. And when I was at university, I got really into airsoft.
Okay.
And in that area, there's loads of it. Well, at least there was a million years ago when I was at university. And I got really into hanging out with these guys that I met at a airsoft place in Nottinghamshire, in Sherwood Forest. Nice. And their team were the first and only.
Okay.
Okay. Yep. And I was became a member of their team because it was, you know, fairly early on, and we had a Christmas get together, as you do. And lo and behold, their workplace for the main guys had a bar, and so I remember going, you know, heading over to this place, not really having too much food. My friend was driving. I didn't really know where we were going. And turning up at Warhammer World and to Bugman's, where they'd borrowed Bugman's for the night. And I wasn't playing 40K, I wasn't playing any Warhammer, but like, I was like looking around Bugman's, and this is, gosh, when is this? This is very early 2000s, so 2002, 2003, something like that, when some of your listeners probably weren't born. And looking around, seeing stuff and thinking, I remember this. I definitely didn't realize that lo and behold, it would drag me back in X amount of years later. Yeah. But it's a funny thing, it's that community, right? Because again, so the point I was coming from was the fact that there was a group of people that all worked at Games Workshop randomly, and they hung out outside of work because they all had these things in common. And then they did this other thing and they brought more people that had things in common together, and it all goes from there. It's a funny old world.
It certainly is. Yeah.
I have no idea. The really bad thing is, because it's a long time ago and the internet was, you know, just a thing, I don't really remember many people's names, so I don't really know if people are still working there. It'd be hilarious if they are. It'd be hilarious if people are listening. I don't think I've even told this story on any other podcast or anything. So it'd be interesting if any of your listeners work at Games Workshop and remember the first and only airsoft team from the early 2000s, and if any of those people still were, it'd be hilarious. Someone will know someone.
I'm sure they will. And if you do, just message in and
that'd be hilarious.
Create those links again. Yeah, that's mad. Yeah. I mean, somebody will. It is always the way. Nobody ever really leaves this hobby.
Yeah. It's just a length of time. Timelines are everything.
Yeah. So yeah, you take a break. You never stop playing Warhammer. You just take a break from it and then you come back to it.
100%.
Yeah. Well, that's it. Thank you very much for your time. I really appreciate it. I've had a lot of fun. It's been great. Hopefully you enjoyed it as well. But
absolutely, it's been great.
So hopefully everybody else has enjoyed it as well. If you want to find Stig, you can find him. So you've got your Instagram, which is tt_stig, if I can speak properly. And then, obviously Tabletop Tactics is Tabletop Tactics. I will put all the links in below, but if anybody hasn't listened or watched Tabletop Tactics at any point, I would be amazed. So
Hey, yeah. And yet there will always be that scenario. Someone's going to find us for the first time.
Well, hopefully they can find you through this podcast.
That'd be awesome.
One person. It's an incredible channel. Like I say, it was probably, I don't know if it was the first or second channel, but it was definitely up there as sort of one of my first channels that I watched getting into it. And I've learned a lot over the years from you guys and still to this day. I mean, literally before this podcast, I was painting, I was trying a new paint scheme and I was watching the, which game was I watching? Oh my God, I was literally just watching it before this. what was the latest one?
I'm glad it was memorable.
Oh no, it was. It was, oh my God.
I'm thinking what's been released.
It's literally the latest one, and my brain is just ceasing.
Oh, was it Flesh Terrors against the Gaming Beavers Necrons?
Yeah, against the Necrons. Yeah. Yeah, literally watched that before. So even to this day, however many, 5-6 years later, still watching TTT, and I don't have a huge amount of time in the day, so it's like there's normally 3 channels that I sort of watch. There's you guys, you're probably my primary channel to go and watch now. Mini Wargaming, to go and watch the narrative side of things. Vanguard Tactics, because I like the guys over at Vanguard Tactics. But yeah, TT probably is one of my, pretty much my primary watch on YouTube. So everyone should go and watch you guys. And yeah, it's been a pleasure chatting with you and getting to sort of know you a little bit more and getting that insight. So thank you very much.
Likewise, sir. Really appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, no, it's really good. And yeah, I hope everyone else enjoyed today's show and thank you for joining myself and Stig. It's really fun making these podcasts and it's, having listeners makes it easier to justify to the other half. So please keep listening.
Keep downloading, share with your friends.
Please, please. Yeah, and if you did enjoy it, please do the standard things of subscribing or leaving a review, something like that. I think I've literally just passed 100 subscribers on Spotify.
Hey!
Well, awesome. which is madness, because when I made this, I never thought that was ever going to happen. So, yeah, it's great. Obviously, you're more than welcome to get in touch with me. So if you get me over on Instagram at First Rank Fire Podcast or on Threads as well, same thing. And yeah, you'll find me. Yeah, thank you all so much for listening, and we'll see you next time. Bye.